WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Why are so many Hollywood films contrived to be uplifting? And why do filmmakers compromise the complexity of their subject matter so that they can leave us feeling good? John Gregory Dunn's new memoir, Monster, is filled with explanations. It chronicles the 8 years that he and his wife, Joan Didion, wrote, rewrote, and revised the screenplay for the film Up Close and Personal. The film started as an adaptation of Golden Girl, a biography of the late network news correspondent and anchor Jessica Savage. When they were offered the project, they took it so that Dunn, who was having heart problems, could meet the Screen Actors Guild qualifications for health insurance. Dunn saw the Savage movie as the story of a small-town girl with more ambition than brains, an overactive libido, a taste for drugs, and a dependent relationship with an abusive Svengali figure, a story that ended with her death at the age of 35 in a freak accident. But by the time the film was finished, it was transformed into a feel-good newsroom romance starring Robert Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer. The transformation began at the first script meeting with Disney executives.
We went out to California, my wife and myself, and the two producers. And we met with Jeffrey Katzenberg and a whole contingent of Disney suits. And we had this meeting. There must have been maybe 10 or 11 people in this meeting. And everyone, of course, deferred to Jeffrey Katzenberg. And his first question was, does she have to die in the end? And we said, not if you don't call her Jessica Savage. And we thought that you could do a story of sort of an ugly duckling making good in the newsroom, which they liked. But they didn't want the more unseemly parts of Jessica Savage's life.
What were the first parts of your screenplay that changed after your meetings?
Well, we wrote a first draft screenplay in 1989, and we finished it sometime in the late spring or early summer of 1989. And This was a young woman with a lot of rough edges. Unlike Jessica Savage, who was sort of a middle class girl from Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, we made our character trailer trash from State Line, Nevada.
Let's stop right there. Why is that more saleable?
Oh no, God, less. They were not interested in doing Jessica Savage. They were interested in doing a newsroom romance. They were not going to put in the unseemly parts of her life. So the idea was to try and keep some edge, but without the lesbianism, without the cocaine, without the abortions, multiple marriages, etc., and so forth. When we left that first meeting, we knew that Jessica Savage had ceased to be a factor in the Jessica Savage story, which automatically meant that we had to change her name. It meant that we could not put in this abusive relationship she had with a Svengali mentor who beat her up and fed her cocaine. Essentially, we had to take the newsroom and try and create a character. So we named her, we named the character played by Michelle Pfeiffer, Sally Ann Atwater. And the only attribute of Jessica Savage that she had was that she had a lisp. We made her from sort of trailer trash from State Line, Nevada, because it was a part of the country we knew. And we knew a lot about trailer camps because we've written about them and the people who come out of them. The character who was ultimately played by Robert Redford, we named Warren Justice, and he was a kind of redneck from the South, sort of a redneck newsman.
You know, I'm wondering how important you think it is for the actors who carry the movie to be, beautiful. Michelle Pfeiffer, very beautiful. Robert Redford, very attractive. Do stars need to be, do you think, conventionally attractive to carry a movie? Or is there a certain kind of charisma that they can have that can carry it even if they're not conventionally beautiful and handsome?
Well, very early on actually before Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer came on board, I asked the producer, Scott Rudin, I said, Scott, what's this picture about? And he said, it's about two movie stars. And all of a sudden, it sort of clarified what we were doing. Essentially, we were making a 1940s Clark Gable, Joan Crawford movie. And once we understood that, it was easier to write. It was a 1940s movie, sort of a newsroom romance with two movie stars. And then you get Redford and Pfeiffer. I don't think movie stars have got to be beautiful. I don't think, for example, that Barbara Streisand is conventionally beautiful. Tommy Lee Jones is not conventionally beautiful. They bring personalities. It's not so much beauty as the personalities that they bring to the part.
In answer to a comment from a producer, you said, "I don't do love." What did you mean by that?
Well, we were doing one of the later drafts of the picture we were talking with Scott Rudin, and he was he came to our apartment, and Rudin never gives you notes. He sits there and he says, "Do this, do that, deliver the moment, more heat here, cut this, I hate this line. This is too OTN, which means on the nose, or this is OTT, over the top." And do this, do that, deliver the moment, more heat, more love. This is a love scene. And I said, finally, I said, "Rudin, I don't do love." And he said, "That's hilarious." What I meant was the kind of conventional sort of sticky love scene that you see in most movies. I think basically actors act that. That's what they get the big bucks for.
So you mean you don't have to write it in? The stars will just kind of put
that
in?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's not in the dialogue. It's in
it's in the
passion of the embrace.
Yes,
when the two stars finally are united.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a certain amount of lead up to it, but I don't think that heat and passion are conveyed as much in words in the movies as they are by the two stars themselves or the two actors themselves.
Do me a favor, give us some numbers, the number of years you spent working on the screenplay, the number of rewrites you did, the amount of profit the movie actually made.
We worked on the picture off and on for 8 years. And I say off and on, this wasn't the only thing we did in those 8 years. We wrote half a dozen other scripts. We each wrote a novel. We wrote six other books between us. We did magazine articles, et cetera, and so forth. So we had a full plate during those 8 years. We did, before the picture started shooting, we did 27 drafts. That is from 1988 to 1994. We did 27 drafts. Actually 27 until March 1995 when the picture started shooting. Then during the course of the shooting, we worked every day with John Avnet. There was a 77-day shoot. He would call us from his house in California when he was leaving for work. He would call us in New York, ask us for the changes that he wanted in that day's script. When I say changes, I don't mean sort of radical changes, but. Sometimes when actors are shooting a scene, they give a color to the scene that the script had not anticipated. And so you have to pick up that nuance in subsequent scenes. And so he would tell us what he wanted done that day and some problems that were coming along the line. I counted the other day that during the 77 days of shooting, we faxed John 489 times, 489 faxes, every one of those faxes containing script changes.
Was this movie worth it for you, looking back, if you had to do it over again?
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, it's a job. I am a professional writer. This is highly paid piecework.
Mm-hmm.
I come in with my eyes open. I know how the movie industry works. I'm not going to change it. I don't want to be a director. I do the job. I do the best possible job I can. I get paid, and I leave. What is nice is if the picture is made. Now, we've had 8 pictures made, and some of them are no good. Some of them were, at least 2 of them were very good. Several of them were profitable. I like doing it. I like the people. There are frustrations in doing movies, as there are frustrations in any job. The bottom line is, how professional are you? And I like to think that I'm extremely professional.
You say that you took on the project of writing Up Close and Personal, before it was called that, of course, because you needed health insurance. And you turned out to really need it. You ended up having open heart surgery, having a heart valve replaced while you were writing the movie. And I'm wondering if you thought a lot about what it would have been like if you hadn't gotten back on Screen Actors Guild health insurance.
I would have been broke. Because I not only had open heart surgery, as I was over the recuperative part of my heart surgery, I got blood poisoning from another source. I got bitten in the ankle by a bug, and I had a bacterial infection in my leg, which was probably could have been more dangerous than the heart surgery, because with the plastic valve, infection moves towards the foreign body. And so I was in the hospital for 9 days, sort of tied up to an industrial strength antibiotic, which was being leaked into my veins via an IV. And so the year that I essentially lost to medicine, if I had to pay for it, would have cost $150,000. I mean, that's a lot of money.
During one of your hospital stays, you were next door to Sonny von Bülow, who at that point had been in a coma for about 10 years. And what could be more real than being next door to a woman who's been in that state for so long? But at the same time, Sonny von Bülow was also, you know, the subject of a movie, another movie.
A very good movie, too.
Yeah, so I guess I'm wondering what that experience was like for you to think about being next door to her as a person and the subject of another screenplay.
I actually saw her. I actually got a fleeting glimpse of her one day. There was a guard outside her room, and the nurses would go in. And one day I was walking down the corridor, and there was a curtain just inside the door. And the nurse was going in and put the curtain aside, and I actually saw her asleep in her hospital bed. But I, you know, it actually did not occur to me that this was 2 different movies.
Well, you have a rewriting job that you're doing this week, and you have very little time to do it, so I'm going to let you get back to your work. And
okay,
first,
thank you very much.
I want to wish you a happy anniversary. We're recording this interview on the 6th anniversary of your heart surgery, in which you got a new heart valve, and I wish you a happy anniversary and good health.
Thank you very much. Here you go.
This is a big day of reflection for you?
No, I just have to go to work.
Okay, well, let me let you go. John Gregory Dunn, thank you very much. John Gregory Dunn's new memoir is called Monster, Living Off the Big Screen.